Consider every product you use every day. Food, technology, vehicles, personal care. Beyond products, every social engagement, every political activity. Somewhere at some time, a researcher was involved, either in a pristine lab or maybe in a backyard garage. The knowledge that's the basis of most everything we have or do was developed by somebody doing the research. Today we're going to learn about that topic on Town Hall Ohio.
This is Town Hall Ohio, home to interesting people, engaging issues, and enlightening stories. Town Hall Ohio is a production of the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation, working to forge a partnership between farmers and consumers, and is supported by Nationwide. Nationwide is on your side. Now, here's Town Hall Ohio host, Joe Corneli.
Your vision of a researcher might be somebody in a lab coat heating something over a Bunsen burner, or doing some kind of physics, math, or calculus on the blackboard or a laptop. Now, personally, I picture my grandpa jotting down notes about his crop on that DeKalb pad from his shirt pocket, so he might do things a little different with his next crop. Well, today's guests know just how important research is in our everyday lives, and they're in to help us get a better feel for that. Dr. Caroline Whitaker retired at the end of last year after 26 years as a researcher and administrator for Ohio State University's research efforts. And in her last 10 years, she served as OSU's senior VP for research, overseeing more than $800 million in research activity. John Cartledge is with us, too. John works with the widely respected research and development firm Battelle. John is engaged in business development focused on consumer and industrial products. And when he first joined Battelle, he worked in their agribusiness division. So, Carol, John, both of you, welcome to Town Hall, Ohio.
Thank you, Joe.
Thanks, Joe.
So this is the first time for both of you. John, we've had several folks on from Battelle in the past, and Carol, I have to admit, you're not our first Ohio State person, but welcome to both of you. Talk a little bit, Carol, we're going to start with you, the research mission at a university like Ohio State. What's the job? What's the goal? What do you aim for? What's the big picture?
So the big picture, Joe, I think is really when you look at the three-part mission of a university, which is teaching, research, and service. That's every faculty member has that three-part mission. Research is really about discovery. And so a place like Ohio State, because we are a land-grant institution, which I think is probably well known to the listeners for the Farm Bureau, is really about giving back to the citizens of Ohio. And so a lot of the research that we do is about that. It's about connecting with Ohio. So as you said in my introduction, we have over $800 million of research at Ohio State, and that spans everything from really archaeology to zoology. And it is a terrific spectrum of research, you know, a lot of engineering, a lot of medicine. The beauty of a place like Ohio State is the fact that everything is together on one campus. So that allows for interdisciplinary research. It allows for the engineers to talk to the doctors, to talk to the agriculture researchers, to talk to the sociologists. And that is a powerful, powerful statement about the advances we can make in research.
For a private enterprise like Battelle, how much is similar, how much is different from the research work done at your company from what Carol just described?
The big similarity that stuck out to me was interdisciplinary. So when we're doing contract research for a paying client, be that the government or a commercial entity, we're able to put together a bespoke team of researchers from different disciplines per project or per contract or per client. So that ability, all under one roof or under one institute, to put together that kind of custom team. And having a mission as well that is serving the greater good. As a nonprofit, Battelle's revenues are invested internally in our own research, but the main driver for us is charitable giving, and the main theme along that line is STEM education. So science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. some folks say that feeds us more university students at Ohio State or employees at Battelle. I like to think that it creates more clients down the road as well as a sales guy.
Give us a little bit of your background. I mentioned, and I found it somewhere in your bio, that you were in the agribusiness space at Battelle when you first started there. But how does one become involved in an enterprise such as Battelle?
Well, I wanted to stay here in Columbus, was the main driver there. My wife is actually a researcher at Ohio State as well. So she's a clinical psychologist, and she was offered a permanent role here. And we had a couple of kids very young, and we thought, well, should we move or stay? And when we decided that we should stay, my first thought was to go to Battelle. I had called on Battelle as a sales representative for various entities over the years, but I'd never been really behind the glass doors in the lobby as an employee. So I was able to get on with an agribusiness team there that was growing and seeing expansion in the U.S. Market. And from there, I actually, no offense to the farmers listening, but I found my real passion. With a chemistry background in education, I was able to sort of pivot to the material science group and their involvement with a lot of consumer products companies and industrial entities.
Well, and there are links between agriculture and those materials, using soybeans as a replacement for oil products and such. But we'll dig into that a little bit more. Carol, in your bio, I saw you have family farm down in Southwest Ohio.
I do, and that's my post-retirement project.
All right.
So I've actually taken another job in the community of Morrow, which is located in Warren County. So I spend about half of my time as the village administrator in the village of Morrow. They wanted someone to write grants for them, so I figured that's something I know how to do. So we have a grant going in tomorrow, actually, to the state of Ohio.
Now, before being an administrator, you actually were a researcher. What kind of things were you working on in your previous part of your career?
So I was a researcher up until about 5 years ago, when my senior VP job really demanded a lot more attention. So I was I worked in the area of multiple sclerosis. I'm a biomedical researcher, and looked at things like gender differences in autoimmune diseases like multiple sclerosis. And we did a lot of work in areas like pregnancy in MS, which MS virtually goes away during pregnancy. So we actually looked at what's different about that time in a woman's life with an autoimmune disease versus after delivery of the baby when the disease comes back with a vengeance. So it was very interesting to study those two facets of disease within a very short period of time.
This is a little bit difficult because if the subject was specifically medical research or agricultural research, I could ask some very specific questions. We're talking broadly about research. John, you get stuck on an elevator with several folks for 10 minutes, and they say, what do you do? And you say, I'm in research. And they go, what's that mean? Why is that important? How might you respond? How do you make people understand broadly the value of scientific curiosity?
That's an awfully long elevator ride, first of all. But it depends on the audience, of course. If I'm speaking to a PhD chemist or a director of R&D or a professor.
Not many of them listening today, I'm
right.
Just guessing.
Yeah, then it's a different conversation. But if I'm talking to everyday citizen like myself, I would want to point to something commonplace that we can find agreement on, like a beverage container or some sort of, or a bottle or something like that. And you know, let them know there's a whole lot of research that went into the development of that. You think, well, it's just a bottle, or it's a six pack holder. You know, you think, well, that's just a ubiquitous item, right? It's an everyday item, and there's not a whole lot of research that goes into it. I've met people who've spent 15, 20 years of their careers just engineering those six rack rings. So there's a lot of R&D that goes into that, and it all goes down to sometimes the atomic level if one wants to go that far, but it's the sort of interaction of all those atoms and their and the molecules they form all the way up into the full system, and that can be exciting, and it could be a 10-minute elevator ride if you really get into it.
So Carol, I was right at the top saying basically everything that we touch in our daily lives, there was a researcher involved. How do you convey the importance of the practice of research?
Well, I mean, I like to say that research is really about problem solving. You know, it's about, you know, stating a problem and then almost like predicting an outcome, yeah. You know, and you predict it's going to be this way. Sometimes it's not that way at all. Sometimes it's something very different. But I think for a lay audience, I would really talk about some things like, you know, everything we touch really has been, you know, of benefit from the research process. All the drugs, every single drug that you put in your mouth, every aspirin, ibuprofen, blood pressure medicine, cholesterol lowering medicine, antibiotics, everything has gone through that research process. Things in your purse, in your pocket. Your iPhone is a terrific example of research. There's hundreds of patents linked to that iPhone. Cars, telephones, telecommunications. In the agriculture business, all the ag machinery has been involved with research. All those additives that actually go on the field are, you know, benefits of research.
And seeds. I often talk about the fact that, you know, the kind of bad weather that we have today that comes on occasion, when that bad weather hit my grandpa's farm, it was the end of the growing season.
Right.
Our seeds today are much more tolerant, can withstand less rain, more insects. And so those kind of pieces of agricultural research are important as well. We've got just a minute here, and I'm going to have you, John, maybe just give me what are one or two, just list them, then we'll follow up on one or two research greatest hits that have come out of Battelle.
Research greatest hits. Well, the greatest hit perhaps is the Xerox machine. That was
really
something that was developed at Battelle, not necessarily invented by a Battelle employee, but somebody had the idea, but somebody could not put that into a commercially available product. And starting back in the late 30s, this gentleman comes to Battelle, and we get that off the ground by the 50s.
So, Carol, when we come back, we're going to see if Ohio State can top the Xerox machine. We'll be back to talk more about the importance of research in our lives with John Cartledge and Carol Whitaker when we continue on Town Hall Ohio.
I think I've got the idea, and all I'm going to say is it was research.
Welcome back to Town Hall Ohio, where our topic is research and helping us understand what's going on in that space. Dr. Carol Whitaker retired recently as Senior Vice President for Research at The Ohio State University. John Cartledge works in business development at Battelle, and glad to have both of them in the studio. So I joked with you, Carol, before the break that Ohio State, did you do anything that would top the development of the Xerox machine like John told us happened at Battelle?
Well, I'm going to try.
All right,
so,
good.
So the whole field of computer animation came from Ohio State. Maybe that sort of, you know, can rival the Xerox machine, although that's a tough act to follow. So the father of computer animation, Charles Surrey, really got his start at Ohio State and developed all of the, you know, kind of the tenets and the principles around computer animation at the university. A second thing is the feline leukemia vaccine, which is our that's been historically our greatest sort of tech transfer product, and that has saved the lives, I think, of thousands and maybe millions of felines throughout the world.
So I want to throw out a couple of terms here because I'm as you I think said earlier, John Q. Citizen, but I often hear the term theoretical research and practical research. Carol, maybe help us understand the difference there. Or I assume there's a difference of some sort.
There is. I think it's a little esoteric, you know, I think because theoretical research, I think, at some point becomes practical research. I think if you, again, look at the iPhone, many of the patents that went into the iPhone may have seemed, you know, really this is not going to go anywhere until somebody discovered that that particular patent linked with another patent gives you an end product, you know, of the iPhone. So I think theoretical research is something that doesn't have immediate practical application, whereas, you know, more applied research actually does. It has a more short-term endpoint and application.
Am I correct? And if I'm not, please tell me. But it seems to be that at a public university like Ohio State, a lot of the, I don't know if you call it theoretical, but the basic research gets done. And then it might move over to some place like Mattel where John works, where it gets turned into a product. Is that the case, or did it used to be and it's changing? I mean, is Ohio State's goal to not just come up with the idea, but to eventually kick some kind of a product or license for a product out the door at the end?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I would have to say that at Ohio State, both kinds of research are done. You know, so there is theoretical research done. And I would have to say over the last probably decade or two, there has been a trend towards more applied research. I like to think about it in terms of the fields that are pursued. So let's say agriculture. I think of agriculture as being, in general, practical and more applied sort of research, as is engineering, because that's done more in connection with industry, for example, as is medicine, particularly the clinical side of medicine, is very practically oriented, whereas more theoretical research may be done in physics, for example, or chemistry, where, you know, it might be more basic science, you know, that ultimately will have practical applications, but perhaps not right away.
John, I would assume that there are some clients with some projects that you can't talk about, but what are some of the things that are brewing at Battelle that you can share with us? What are some of the areas that are popular for people to come to you and say, help us solve this problem?
I'll name one for now. Is off the top of my head is something called NEON. It's the National Ecological Observation Network. So this is a continental-wide sort of network of observing how different ecosystems in our country are changing. So it'll be a 30-year program set up by the National Science Foundation. And that's a large undertaking of development of sensors, novel sensors for how data is collected in air, water, soil, what have you. And then the analysis of those samples can all be done at Battelle as well, or with our partners. And then the uploading of that data and management of that data in a secure way, such that per the NSF's arrangement, is that it will be available to all academic institutions. Well, it'll be available to anybody, really, who can access that data.
So how might something like that in 30 years impact my grandkids' lives? What are we going to be able to do with all of this new data that's collected and collated?
Well, if you take a look at a lot of the sort of global trends out there, and I think you know, even the farming community can respect this. There's a big move to cities. There's an increase in the size of population within cities, or the percentage, at least, of people who live in cities. But counter to that is the amount of land that is available to grow food to feed all those people, and the security of the of that food supply, the safety involved in all that. So these sort of global trends can be sort of monitored, if you will, by taking a look at how ecosystems are changing. Ecosystems are changing, however they are, but they need to be monitored.
Well, we're going to follow up with some of the challenges facing the research community. I'm going to guess money might be on that list, but we're going to find out when we talk further with John Cartledge from Battelle, Carol Whitaker, retired from Ohio State, when we're back with more of Town Hall Ohio.
Call it understanding, a willingness to grow. I'm finally understanding, there's so much I can know.
Welcoming back to Town Hall, Ohio, Dr. Carol Whitaker from Ohio State University, John Cartledge from Battelle. We're talking about research in our everyday lives and why it makes a difference. And you've heard some tremendous examples if you've been with us through the last 30 minutes or so. I would think that just about everybody can agree that research is important, but there are lots of things, Carol, that people feel are important. And so we as individuals and organizations and governments have to prioritize. And one measurement of priority is how much money do we spend on something. How are we doing, both publicly and privately, in investing in research here in the United States?
Well, I would have to say that's one of our biggest challenges. Our funding has stayed fairly flat over the last decade in terms of absolute dollars that have gone towards R&D, you know, research and development. And I think growing research does take investment. And I would have to say that while the United States is still ahead in terms of absolute dollars, there are companies or countries that are rapidly gaining on us, China being probably the most growing the fastest. South Korea is also growing, you know, rapidly too. But in terms of, I think, intention and in terms of strategy, China is really, I think, on our heels in terms of research. One of the other challenges, I would say, is actually the pipeline of trainees coming up through the system at this point. I think as young people see the challenges for getting funded and starting their careers, I think that, you know, that could possibly turn them off and they could look at more lucrative fields like computer science or something like that, that, you know, where they could perhaps have a more appropriate lifestyle, something that's more, you know, less rigorous than the research area.
So do you see that reflected in the private sector, money issues and talent issues?
Money and talent, of course, yes. Both are issues for us. When you're a federal government contractor mainly...
Hey, you got it made then.
Well, you tend to go for... things happen inside the walls at Battelle where there's discussions of, which department has a really juicy budget, and let's focus some energy there. So that's one way to keep Battelle's mission going and to make sure we're chasing the right funding. I had a question actually that I would like to have Carol's opinion on is she referenced China and Korea. Now, it used to be so many graduate students or even undergraduate students would come from Asia to study at universities in the States because that was the place to do it. But do you see research institutions, research universities growing in Asia such that, a high school age kid from China doesn't necessarily need to come to the U.S., can actually stay home and develop his or her career there?
I think we're we're seeing an inflection point right now where I think there has been substantial investment in Chinese universities. I don't think we're quite there yet, but I think we're moving pretty rapidly in that direction where it's just as good to stay home and be educated than it is to come to this country. And I think it will probably depend on some diplomatic relations that will have a big impact on, you know, on students coming here. But I think we're getting there.
Hmm. Great question. You ought to sit in this chair next time, John. But we talked a little bit about research funding, and I teased John about having access to federal research dollars, the national government. Where's the money come from? Is the bulk of it coming from the taxpayers, or is the bulk of it coming from companies like, I almost said Monsanto. There used to be this company called Monsanto so many, well, days ago.
Yeah.
But the private sector, what's kind of that mix, Carol?
So I can give you the Ohio State mix that I think is pretty representative of most of the universities, most of the kind of the large research intensive universities in the country. Our federal funding is about 60%. So most of our entire, if you put our entire research budget into a pie, it would be about 60-65% federal. We have a pretty large industry component of research, which is about 20%. That's larger than actually most universities. And the rest is private funding, or it is, you know, from the state. The state, as you might imagine, has been a somewhat shrinking source of dollars.
We were talking about trends in the research profession and how those impact us in our daily lives, and we're going to follow up on that conversation in just a couple of moments. Our guests in the studio with us, John Cartledge. He works in business development for the nonprofit organization, widely known organization in research and development, Battelle. Dr. Carol Whitaker is retired as Senior Vice President of Research at Ohio State University. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to Town Hall, Ohio. We're chatting about the profession of research and what it means to all of us and helping us explore that area a bit more. Dr. Carol Whitaker, retired as Senior Vice President of Research at Ohio State and now the City Administrator for, you say it was Morrow, Ohio, right?
The Village of Morrow.
All right. I used to run around down there in Southwest Ohio a little bit, so I know a little bit about that area. John Cartledge is in business development with the research and development company Battelle. We talked about money being a concern, as it is for just about, I guess, any industry or any aspect of society. But Carol, follow up a little bit on the flow of talent into the profession. We recently have talked on this show about you don't have to be a rocket scientist or a brain surgeon to have a good career. But these men and women that are going to spend their times in lab coats or out in the field, they got to be pretty smart. Give me an idea of the kind of people that are attracted and you want attracted into professional research.
So one of the things we find is important is early exposure of students to research. And sometimes that's as early as middle school or high school. So it's almost as if they need exposure to this kind of problem-solving kind of way of thinking. That we find one of the most important aspects. So innate intelligence certainly is very important, but kind of a motivation is also very important. So how hard you're willing to work. You can be the smartest person in the world, but if you're really not motivated to work hard, it's just not going to work in a research area. So you really do have to, you know, I think be very, very motivated, and you can make up by not being the smartest person in the world. But if you're willing to work hard, because often it's, you know, they're long hours. They're, you know, you you really have to think about research, I think, 24/7. It's not just a discipline that fits nicely into an 8-to-5, you know, sort of job. You know, so it's people that can take, you know, facts from a large number of places and put them together that I think make the best researchers.
So Ohio State kicks out, what, I don't know, 40,000 graduates a year or some huge number. And I'm sure that more than a couple of them are qualified to come work at a prestigious firm like Battelle. So as your folks are recruiting, what differentiates potential employees from a private sector employer's perspective?
I would first like to second Carol's comment about motivation. As a grad school dropout myself, I started a PhD program and I couldn't focus 100% of my time on it at all or thoughts on it. I was very distracted with everyday life and paying the bills and whatnot, and that definitely shows.
Looks however, like you landed on your feet, though.
I hope so. I married a PhD instead.
Perfect.
So, anyway, your question. Could you remind me your question?
When you're looking at potential employees from Ohio State, what are some of the things that you're looking for, or your company is, at least, as an employer?
Sure. So, since we have a high level of client engagement, so when you're working in a lab at Battelle, you are first of all working on a team which may be a different team than you worked on with last month because you're on a different project or whatever. So being able to do the science and have the excellence in that level, but also the people skills there. So being able to present to a client or get across what your abilities can bring to somebody's problem.
Yeah, maybe your take on that, Carol. As a communicator, it's my contention that I could probably make a pretty healthy living if I just got into a room with scientists and translated everything they said into real people talk. Do we need to ramp that up in getting the scientists?
Absolutely, absolutely. So I would just want to second something that John said about collaboration. You know, and I think that is something we probably need to look at more when we look at potential students and their ability to work together. I can't emphasize that enough, you know, in terms of ability to relate to, you know, other people. But communication, absolutely. There's a new program that's been started. I mean, this is a national program, but it's called the 3-minute thesis. And so you have to, so students have to put their thesis into one slide and 3 minutes.
Oh, man.
So that is, I mean, that's tough, but it does teach you how to be succinct.
That's the scientific version of Twitter. We'll be back to talk more about research and some of the challenges that we all should be aware of. Our guest, John Cartledge from Battelle, Carol Whitaker from Ohio State. We'll be back right after this.
So far to go on this open road, a world to explore, but I know there's something more.
John Cartledge from Battelle, Carol Whitaker from Ohio State are our guests as we wrap up our conversation on research. So much of what gets done at the private in the private sector, in the public sector like Ohio State University, John, it's dependent upon somebody that has their fingers on the purse strings, whether it's in Washington or the State House. How much effort goes into, from research professionals such as yourself at Battelle, how much energy and time goes into reaching out to policymakers and making sure they believe in what you believe in?
Well, I mean, there's a very good sort of system. Well, there's a very large administrative system, put it that way, in place for procurement of federal dollars or state dollars, for that matter, for research activities. And I think that sort of knowing how that system operates, knowing the people who are feeding information into that system is a key part of being successful for Battelle. We have offices in Washington, D.C., And there's a shuttle flight, essentially, from John Glenn to Reagan National. So it's there's a lot of back and forth, and I sort of maintaining those relationships is big for us as well.
As we start to close down, I want to kind of circle back here at the end to where we began, Carol. You were talking about your view of why research is important and what it delivers to us. And my understanding is you, as the director of research at Ohio State, interacted quite a bit with the College of Food, Agricultural, and Environmental mm-hmm. Sciences. And their model is the university model of research, teaching, and extension. How are they doing there on the ag campus? I hope you're going to see really good.
they're doing fabulously. So I would actually point out. The FAES College does a great job in turning research into action, and that's largely through extension. And they have this wonderful online resource called Ohio Lines, and it's really in 10 different areas. And there's one that I specifically wanted to point out, and that was free online data and tools for the agricultural community. And this is a wonderful document that has been put together by Scott Shearer and John Fulton, which actually talks about things like in the area of food, for example. There's 123 fact sheets in that one category for looking at things as diverse as canning basics all the way to diagnosing plant diseases. But why I particularly point that out is there's some wonderful resources there for farmers, for particularly things like access to government databases, where you can actually do a digital elevation model of your farm. You can do a soil survey from a geographic database. You can do a vegetative index for the crops on your farm. So there's access and links on that fact sheet from Ohio Line for all of these resources. And I just can't, give them enough kudos for putting all of this information out there and publicly available.
Well, both of you agreed that to attract people to the profession, you need to probably reach them early. I'm not silly enough to think that I've got middle schoolers and high schoolers that are listening to Town Hall, Ohio right now, but maybe some parents and grandparents are. What's the one thing, John, that you would tell these parents and grandparents as far as directing their children to at least consider a profession in science and research?
Well, I mean, I'll cite the example. Just this morning, I took my kids off to my son and a couple of his friends off to a Minecraft math camp today. And they had some questions about what is math. I mean, there's not math in everything. And I said, yeah, there's kind of math in everything. You know, go home and toss a ball in the air and watch how it flies. That's a parabolic curve. And they're third graders, so they were like, what's a parabolic curve? But I sort of had to explain it. But I said, you just watch it. And it's always following the same pattern. And it's sort of making them question me there. And now they're getting curious. And who knows? I mean, just a little bit of curiosity at a young age can really grow into a research career.
I want to thank both of you for taking the time to come in and sit in the studio with us today. John Cartledge, who you just heard from, is with Battelle. Dr. Carol Whitaker, retired recently from The Ohio State University, both helping us take a look at what's going on in the world of research. Thanks to all of you for joining us this week on Town Hall, Ohio.
Town Hall, Ohio is a project of the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation and is brought to you with the support of Nationwide. Nationwide is on your side. Join us again next week for Town Hall, Ohio.